Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Mike Pfeiffer, and you're listening to the Cloud Skills FM podcast. What's up, everybody? It's Mike Pfeiffer. Welcome back to another episode of the Cloud Skills FM podcast. And in today's episode, super excited to be talking about security when it comes to doing things in the DevOps space, in the cloud space. In this episode, I've got Julian Vihint with me. He leads the Firefox operations security team at Mozilla. Julian, how's it going?
Hey, Mike. Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, so really excited to have you here. I know that you've got a lot of practical experience. And for anybody that doesn't know you already, maybe you could share with us kind of who you are, what you're working on today, maybe how you got to this moment in time in your career, all that fun
stuff.
Sure,
yeah. Well, so I'm a security engineer at heart, and that's also my training. I got a master's degree in information security about 15 years ago, and I've been in the industry since. I've been on the operational side of things for the best part of two decades now, building and running services on the internet. And I try to apply security to everything that I do. And that's what led me to work mostly on security nowadays. I've been at Mozilla for almost 7 years now, working in cloud services and helping developers and operators run highly secure cloud services for Firefox users. So I lead a team of 8 people now that is entirely focused on operation security in the world of Firefox services.
Nice. I guess you guys are probably busy right now with the surge of internet activity, I would assume.
We've certainly seen a number of spikes. Yes, people are using the internet more than ever, and it's more than ever important to give them secure tools and secure infrastructure to navigate a fully remote world safely.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. And I'd love the book that you put out through Manning. So Securing DevOps, Security in the Cloud. And I know that security is a space a lot of people are getting into for the first time, but a lot of people already have lots of IT experience. We're seeing lots of practitioners kind of move into this space. And I'd love to talk about the book, though, just basically what it's all about. I know that you kind of break it down from beginning to end, but maybe we could talk a little bit about the book and how somebody listening might be able to work through it, because we are giving away copies of the book through Manning, as part of this episode for everybody listening. And so this is an awesome book, but Julian, maybe you could take us through the book and explain what it's all about.
Sure. So perhaps a little bit of history would help. A few years ago, I think it was probably 5 or 6 years ago, I was working, like most people, on traditional data center infrastructure with the LANs and everything. But I had been running services in AWS for several years by then. And at Mozilla, a group of people started working on what we called the cloud services and how we would run those cloud services in the cloud and take advantage of all of the new operational techniques that had been developed in the early 2010s, mid-2010s. So that's immutable deployments and CI/CD and all of that stuff. And they started asking security questions. How do we secure high-scale services in AWS and in the cloud in general? What kind of problems do we have to deal with? How different is it from traditional infrastructure? And I started working with that group of engineers and trying to figure out exactly how we're going to implement a security strategy for a cloud environment. And almost at the same time as I was doing that work, Manning reached out and said, hey, we're looking for someone to write a book about DevOps security. So as I was hashing out the details of our security strategy for Mozilla and the Firefox services world, I also was writing the book at the same time and kind of mapping what we were doing at work with what I was writing for in the book. So the book is designed to be a progression from, we're starting with something very, very simple to we have a number of large scale services that have been running for several years. And how do we go from this very simple environment that has very simple risks to this massively complex organization that needs to deal with massively complex problems? And it goes through the technical aspects of building security in the cloud, building security specifically in AWS, but a lot of these concepts apply to other cloud providers as well, whether it's GCP or Azure or others. And some of these concepts are more engineering concepts and cultural concepts that security teams need to adopt in order to work efficiently with DevOps teams. So I try to kind of mix the cultural and the practical with the technical in the book and give something that is very tangible to the reader.
Yeah, I love that because we really need that. It's been obvious to me over the last couple of years working with so many people. It's a lot of people new to just the concept of some of the basics, like you mentioned, CI/CD. Immutable infrastructure is a big stretch if you've been used to doing enterprise IT for a while. You know, lots of people in the enterprise space, you know, deploy servers for 3 years and it's like they don't have to think about it again until the next refresh. And so now everybody's getting into DevOps and learning that. And then I think to your point, like once you see a pipeline and finally understand how the components fit together, now you're like, oh, how do we secure it? And so I love like the first kind of section of your book is all about taking a bare bones pipeline, right? And then looking at every layer pretty much of the stack and like, where can we apply security everywhere along the way, right? So like web tier, infrastructure tier, stuff like that.
That's right. And what's interesting is my first, the first chapter of the book is the one that really took a long time to write. And we're talking like maybe 3 or 4 months to write that chapter because I worked with my editor a lot on like refining that first chapter. And it's available for free, so anyone can go download it and read it and kind of map what the book was going to look like based on that first chapter. And my initial approach, having the experience that I had in traditional infrastructure, was to compare what we were doing in traditional infrastructure with what we would be doing in the cloud. And that turned out to be inefficient in the most part. And we kind of scrapped that out completely after the first months of thinking about it, because in fact, it's much, much harder to try to transfer existing security knowledge to the cloud than it is to just scrap it out and go look at a fresh clean slate and figure out how we're going to secure it from the get-go. A lot of techniques that we took for granted in traditional data centers, like you control the network, you can go maybe plug something on the core switch and dump all the traffic and do like network analysis, are completely impossible to do in the cloud. And many people have tried to do, you know, like deep network security monitoring in AWS. And sure, you can, you know, find ways to do it, but that's not necessarily how you should approach the security problem. So instead of trying to map the old to the new world, we took the approach of starting from a clean slate completely and looking at why we're securing these things and what layers do we have to worry about and how do we map our security requirements into those various layers. So taking advantage of completely like programmable infrastructure, for example, or the fact that we at any time you're running something in AWS or GCP or Azure or any other, you have a perfect inventory of your assets. That doesn't exist in a data center, and it's a very powerful tool for security and for access control and everything else. So really the goal of securing DevOps was to explain to people how they could think about security in a brand new world and kind of abandon the older tools that don't really map well into this cloud world.
That is a massive point that I'd love to underline because I see that a lot. I see a lot of over-engineering because of the fact of what you said is they take stuff that has been on-prem and they try to smash it into the cloud using the old patterns and practices. I love that you took that approach because I think more people need to do that. I think over-engineering is a side effect of trying to stick with what you know and not really, you know, sitting back and being like, hey, this is a new way of thinking. And so that's awesome. Was there any major challenges along the way, like that you had to, maybe something unexpected that you faced or anything like that? Or was it pretty much just like trial and error and slowly chunking your way through it?
I think there's the biggest really hurdle for people adopting the cloud is figuring out exactly how much you trust it in the first place, right? And what does that mean in technical terms? Any organization that goes from on-prem to cloud start with a very low trust approach. They don't want to trust AWS or any cloud provider. And but over time, you realize that you have to trust it. And when you start trusting it for certain things, you don't necessarily need to overcomplexify your security. Like you said, like keep things simple so you can keep them secure as well. An example of that would be, you know, do you need encryption inside of your infrastructure between your application node and your database, for example? Well, it entirely depends on how you run your environment. If you're on-prem and you have a completely locked down data center, no one can get to the hardware. do you really need to encrypt what's going between the application server and the switch and the database server? Like, what does that buy you on top of everything else that you have? Perhaps not. Perhaps you do. It entirely depends on your environment. In the cloud, it's the same thing. And at first, people don't want to trust the cloud because it's something that they don't directly own. But over time, they get to learn, like, all right, you know, these controls are managed by the cloud provider and we can trust them to do a good job and we can focus on other things. And little by little, people go further up the stack and they start thinking about problems more from a business perspective and a functionality perspective and less from a hardware perspective. And that's the hardest problem for anyone really approaching DevSecOps from the beginning, and is to detach yourself from the hardware and start looking at those problems as functionalities and business risks and less from really what's going on the wire. That was the biggest hurdle. From a technical perspective, perhaps the most complex technical challenge of adopting any of these technologies is that they are very, very complex and it's very hard to ramp up. Whether you look at GCP or Azure or AWS, or, you know, you start talking about Kubernetes or even like Puppet and Ansible, all of that stuff, Terraform, whatnot, is super hard to do, right? It's going to take weeks and weeks and weeks for any engineer, whether they're junior or experienced, to figure out how to use them at the most basic levels. It's going to take them years to become experts at it. And what I've seen, and I've heard you talk about this with a previous guest, a lot of people try to do is to go straight for like the most complex possible solution from day one, right? I want to go to the cloud. I'm going to do Kubernetes myself in a super complex AWS environment, and you're going to completely fail at it. Your services are going to be unreliable, and you're going to just go crazy with the amount of complexity you have to deal with. A better approach, I think, is to gradually add complexity as you need it, right? So what I personally love, if you're like a single dev building stuff, is to just use something like Heroku, which is really just like a couple line of configuration. You can fully automate your deployments in a GitHub repository, and there's almost no complexity to deal with. But that's only going to take you so far. There's going to be a point where if your company grows and it starts having specific needs around data analysis, maybe you want to access more databases, et cetera, you had more engineers, and you're going to add complexity. You know, you're going to adopt technologies that are more difficult to manage, more difficult to understand. And that's really the complexity of the cloud that becomes apparent to you, is that those things are really freaking hard to use. Don't try to use all of them from day one.
Yeah. It's like that, don't try to boil the ocean, right? Or try to like hit a home run at your first at bat in the major leagues. So true. Yep. And I see that a fair amount. And we have talked about that in the past. I love that you kind of touched on the fact that there's an element of relearning or unlearning, right? Like going into this world, because a lot of people do drag in their baggage of thinking of things in terms of hardware or the way they did it on-prem. It's good stuff, man. It's really good stuff. So in terms of, you know, different things inside a pipeline, there's different ways to do security depending on the different phases of the pipeline, right? There's, you know, concepts like static code analysis, and then there's, you know, event response further down the pipeline. And there's the whole concept of analyzing your logs and intrusion detection, all these kinds of things. And that's kind of like what you step people through in the book, right? Kind of procedurally, one step at a time, and uncover those concepts. Is that right?
Yes, I think there is a fairly reasonable approach to building a security program in an organization. I've seen teams that have terrible infrastructure security, invested all in like threat hunting. And I'm like, you're trying to solve a third year problem when you don't even know how to do the basics of year one, right? And I think that's generally a mistake. What I recommend, and the approach we take in the book, is start with the basics of running a service in a cloud environment. The security groups, the permissions on the users, the making sure your database isn't exposed to the internet with a, you know, weak username and password, like the very basic things. And you might think that this is, you know, too basic, but in fact, to this day, it is still what we spend most of our time auditing in very complex professional environments, because it's very easy to build a database and let it run for a few years and add things over to it, you know, over time, and and overlook a very simple security control and leave it open on the internet. Simple cases where I've seen this happen is that a database was being migrated. So someone opened it up to the internet for like, because they needed it open for like a day and forgot to close it, right? And these mistakes happen. You need to audit for them. You need to make sure that at any time, your infrastructure is absolutely secure. And then you can go up to like application security and look at, again, some of the basic controls. Make sure you use safe web framework. Make sure you can test those frameworks, ideally in CI/CD. So you can leverage automated testing tools. We use ZAP, the OWASP Z-Attack proxy, heavily in the team. And we automate, you know, scans in ZAP using Jenkins to audit our applications all the time. And we do things like baseline, well, I talk about it in the book and we use it quite a bit in our services. We call that the baseline scan, which is really a set of like 20 or 30 basic tests that all applications must be able to pass, right? And it's a basic stuff. There's nothing super fancy in there. But covering the basics is really what should keep a security team busy on their first year, right? Make sure you understand how the infrastructure and the applications work and you have good basic security, and then ramp it up and go to more complex topics over time, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think a lot of the black eye, you know, news stories that some of the platforms have gotten is usually a user issue, to your point, of not doing the basics, not like applying a proper fundamental security controls, like the data leak issues in Amazon S3. Usually Amazon gets the black eye, but it's typically the customer that didn't configure their security rules the right way, or their permissions, their access lists for their buckets and stuff, or you know, Capital One.
It's super easy to create an S3 bucket and just leave it like this. And one day someone will need to have access to the data. You'll create an ACL and leave it there. What's really hard to do, in fact, is to regularly audit your cloud infrastructure for these kind of issues, right? And I talk about this a lot. There's this idea of test-driven security in the book that's really like, you know, make sure that even before you start building a service, you have good tests for it, right? Because all of your services are going to look the same. You're going to have 20 applications that are all just one database and one application server, and you cannot use the same test across all of them. And so make sure you have good tests and you run them every day and you can detect those very basic failures. Because it's easy to for anyone to make like just a quick mistake and for that quick mistake to become a huge, huge problem.
Right. So when it comes to doing all of this work, one of the things that I think will happen at scale for most companies is, you know, very locked down pipeline and making people do all of their changes through code. Is that something that you guys do? Where it's like nobody actually goes in and touches the infrastructure. It's all running through a pipeline. So you're validating the infrastructure, you're validating the code itself for the application, all that stuff. Is that kind of how you guys handle it?
Yeah. And in fact, that's how we've been operating for, I want to say 4 years now, 4 or 5 years. It at first, it wasn't necessarily straightforward. It is still difficult to do that for legacy applications that weren't really built to be deployed this way. But yeah, a typical application nowadays will be running inside of a Docker container. So we don't have to worry about, you know, deploying dependencies directly on systems. And so all of the pipeline has to do really is to create an application server that's going to run a Docker container, that's going to open, you know, maybe provision a database and migrate database versions. And when you redeploy a new version of the application, you essentially create a separate stack, qualify it, and when it's ready, you move your load balancer to that new stack, right? So blue-green deployments where you have those two stacks ready, and you can even like send a little bit of traffic to the new stack to make sure it behaves properly before you send all of the traffic to it, etc. And all of that is entirely automated. Now, that doesn't mean entirely automated doesn't mean you don't have operations teams at the wheels, right? Because we still have like dedicated, highly experienced, highly skilled ops people who are essentially driving those deployments, but they work like developers. They commit their code. They roll out features through automations. They roll back through automation, et cetera, et cetera. But they're really focused. That's the role of an SRE, right? They're really focused on the reliability of those running services.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I've been talking about that a lot is because I think there's a lot of, you know, ops and sysadmin types out there that don't realize that eventually that's going to be their reality, right? Of being more of an SRE and doing things through code than anything else, especially like at the Microsoft side of the world, right?
And I think they're going to start, and that's also true for a lot of security folks who don't necessarily have those, you know, programming and engineering skills. But effectively, with the cloud environments maturing, with businesses realizing that they really gain a lot of value from using those cloud environments, because that was still not the case 5 years ago. Like, businesses were very reluctant to adopt cloud infrastructure. They wanted on-prem. They wanted to control the hardware. They're starting to come to terms with that. And so they're asking of their sysadmins and of their developers and of their security people to be trained to be capable of managing those environments. And what that means in practice is that everybody codes. Everybody adopts the same programming principle. You end up having sysadmins doing, sprints on their infrastructure, which is something only developers were doing some time ago. Everyone in my team writes code, and it's a focused security team, but everybody's a developer. In fact, when we hire people, whether it's on the operation side or the security side, we would ask them to program, to run through a little programming challenge, because we know they're going to have to write tools, right? They're going to have to write AWS API clients to go audit the configuration, et cetera, right? So that really is becoming a reality. There's a change in the type of skills we're asking. I don't know if it's a change. Maybe we're going back to the 90s where everybody was a programmer, and we kind of, you know, moved away from that in the 2000s and early 2010s, but for sure in the 2020s, we're going to go back to a world where everybody codes.
I agree 100%. And I really see that being a big thing in the future, to what you're talking about, interviews and, you know, maybe asking you to do some whiteboarding or some pseudocode or some kind of code challenge, which isn't very common for ops right now, but I believe, to your point, like, that's where this is going, right? Long term.
Yeah,
that's totally really interesting to hear. And it's also interesting to hear from you guys, because, and like yourself, you wrote the book, but also what you guys do day to day at Mozilla, because you were early in cloud compared to almost everybody else, right? There was several bleeding edge kind of organizations that started there, and you're obviously one of them. And it's a good pre-frame to understand where are other organizations going to end up going, right? Because you guys were a lot earlier than most people, especially in the enterprise.
That's right. And that's actually interesting to see when I talk to people about security and how we're adopting security at Mozilla, and in trying to compare that to where they're at right now. And this isn't like, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but I do see that we're like a few years ahead. Right? That what we adopted 3 or 4 years ago is what most organizations are dealing with now. And particularly for like large technical corporations that have a massive on-prem presence and are starting to, you know, think about ways to reduce their cost or at least better manage their resources. And so they're going through this transformation right now, and they are asking their engineers to retrain and like unlearn, relearn, you know, transform to really adopt these new environments. So we're seeing it, and I suspect it's now at the stage where most of the like Bay Area tech companies are 100% cloud, and all of their people are retrained. We're seeing it in major corporations throughout the world, mostly like the financial companies that historically had, you know, major tech presence. They are transforming now. Retails, et cetera, et cetera. All of these big organizations, manufacturers, and the small businesses, in fact, are starting to think about it. They're starting to pay attention to it. So even the sysadmins who work like in a small 50-person company somewhere in Alabama and only has to manage 10, you know, Windows servers in a closet will soon have to think about the impact of cloud infrastructure in their own environment. So it's coming. They have a few more years to go, but eventually, before, you know, 2025, I think, or around that time, they will be in the cloud fully.
Yeah, that's true, because the ecosystem changes, right? So when the vast majority of everybody is doing things in the cloud, yeah, there will still be some on-prem stuff, but you're going to be left with what's available in the ecosystem, where there won't be as much on-prem. That's a really good point. And your book itself, is it platform agnostic, or is it more AWS centered, or is it just kind of like high level patterns and practices? Because obviously the patterns are what are important, right?
Right. Yeah. I the practice aspect of the book, particularly part one, is very AWS centric. And there are some things in there that do not really transfer over to like GCP or Azure, in particular when you start talking about access controls inside of AWS, the permission model, et cetera. But the concepts are very, very similar. You may not have a security group, but you'll have a network ACL or et cetera, right? You'll have ways to convert that to a different environment. And I've been wondering if I should have a GCP edition of the book, for example, but I don't think at this point it's necessarily needed. I think most people, first of all, most organizations, when they think about cloud, they first think about AWS, right? That's the environment they go to. That's the number one on the market. And then both Azure and GCP are catching up to this quite quickly, but it's still going to be a couple of years before they really can match to the size, just the impact that AWS has on the cloud world. So they're challenging it, but it's going to be a couple of years before they get there, I think.
Yeah.
So the book is still,
Yeah, sorry to cut you off there. I was just going to say AWS is massive. Microsoft and even Google has done an amazing job of closing the gap. But really the one thing that really helps you understand how big AWS really is to go to reInvent, their annual conference, especially over the last couple of years, because they literally take up the entire Vegas Strip with casino, like they're renting all the casinos out. I don't know how many tens of thousands of people are at reInvent, but it's kind of obvious when you go to an AWS conference, you're like, all right, this thing is way bigger than I probably thought it was, you know, just because they were first, right? And so you're right, like it is massive. But what I've noticed working with enterprise customers is Azure has gotten a lot of interest over the last 18 months. And now, you know, people that are Microsoft shops are going to that first because there's a tie-in with all of the Active Directory stuff. So it's getting interesting. And, you know, when I left Amazon in 2016, all I did was AWS projects for the first couple of years. So it is starting, the pendulum is definitely swinging. So it's an interesting time. But, you know, I think that there's so many similarities that you could draw a parallel from AWS to Azure and to GCP. And so I don't think, like you said, I don't think you need a specific chapter on it. I think the patterns and practices that you cover in the book are really good. I know that you had a case study in there on incident response. So I'd love to hear about that because I think that's a place where people don't really have a ton of visibility if they're new to this, right?
Yeah. This was a way for me to share. It gets kind of boring to write 400 pages of technical advice. So I wanted just something a little bit different halfway through the book, like a little story, something a little more entertaining. And also, I've read a lot of forensics and incident response books, and it's always the same thing. Here's 200 pages of tools, and we're going to run you through how to use them. And you feel like you're reading man pages for 7 hours, and I can't stand it. I can't. It's just so boring. And so I wanted to put it in context. So the idea was to take like a couple, you know, bits and pieces from incidents we've had to deal with over the years and turn that into a funny little story of an organization getting compromised and to show like a typical organization would respond to a compromise. So it's actually pretty close to how we respond to incidents and security breaches. Not that it happens. We never get attacked. We're so secure. Nobody ever attack us, right?
You're not a big target or anything. Yeah.
Not a big target. And so I just essentially tried to map like how any organization would, efficiently respond to a security incident to not only stop the attack, but also put themselves in a position to recover as quickly as possible, right? And the interesting thing is that, you know, hopefully the readers will get a few interesting data points out of this chapter. But at the end of the day, you got to run through it yourself, right? You got to get hacked. You're going to get hacked at some point. If you run something on the internet, no matter how secure you are, you're going to get hacked. And it's not so much the attack or the breach that's going to take you down. It's the way you respond to it, right? And that's really what I'm trying to show in that chapter is you're going to get attacked. That's fine. It's going to happen to you. Just make sure you're handling it properly right? You're communicating properly, that you're not burning bridges across your organization, and you're putting yourself in a position to recover, learn from it, and become more secure out of it. That's really the goal of this chapter, right?
Yeah, that's awesome, because you need those reference points to like really crystallize it in your mind, I think. And to your point, like you can have all the binary information, but seeing and hearing about an example really helps solidify it. And so I thought that was a really cool aspect of the book. So I agree to like mix it up a little bit and show something real world is really interesting.
I was just going to say, I like this Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
That's basically incident response.
Right? Yeah. I love that one, man. That's so true too. Right. It's like, it's true with like performance and availability and security. Like nothing is 100% in this world, right? Like, stuff's going to fail.
And the things you're going to prepare for are probably not going to be the things that are going to hit you, right? And, right. And that's always when people talk about scalability, for example, is something that I find so silly you need to make proper engineering decisions from the get-go, but the scalability problems you're going to have are probably not the problems you're identifying now. Right. So the point is more need to be prepared. It's the same for security. You need to make sure that you have a good engineering organization, that you have good communication, that people work well together. So when problems happen, you can deal with them efficiently. And that's more important than trying to map out every single scenario from day one.
Yeah. With some of those services as well, they're like, especially AWS and Microsoft starting to do this now. I'm not sure, you know, GCP probably the same way, but in certain places, they're starting to use machine learning to predict performance issues and predict other things. Is that something that's happening in the security space? And do you see that being a big focus maybe in the future?
We're playing with this a bit. I mean, there are tons of startups that will tell you that they apply artificial intelligence and machine learning to predict where you're going to get hacked, and most of it is snake oil. We're investigating what we can do with it internally, and I'll tell you, it's hard. It's really hard because before you can even get to the machine learning part, you need to have really, really good data on what's happening inside of your environments. You need to have that data standardized in formats you can, manipulate easily. So that part, like we get into the world of fraud detection, and that's really where most organizations break down, is that they will have some logs, but they won't have the visibility across everything. It will be a very small part of it. And they can't even have visibility across everything because the volume is so high that they can't collect it all. Even if you manage to get all of that data, categorizing it is incredibly hard. If you have, 1,000 hits per second on a web service, categorizing the 10 requests per second that are malicious is very, very hard to do. So I think we're still at stages where, again, simplicity is the best approach here, like going back to the basics of, flagging, using known bad actor and indicators of bad behavior, without getting into the statistical artificial intelligence world, will get you very, very far. And there is a point where if you can do the basics really, really well in fraud detection, by all means, hire a data scientist and have them look at your data, but also have a budget for it because that's expensive to do. And the results are uncertain. So I would say this is an area where as an industry, we need to grow. I haven't seen any like out of the box compelling solutions yet, right? Everything that I've seen that's mature and efficient comes from major corporations like Google and Facebook and Twitter that can afford to throw 10 or 20 engineers at a problem and have major resources. But smaller shops that have typically between 3 and 5 security engineers, they can't afford to look at machine learning and artificial intelligence for these sort of things.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good food for thought. I think the recurring message of stick to the fundamentals, right? Or the simplicity, embrace that. And because to your point, and I agree 100%. Even in architecture projects, just not even thinking security only, sticking with the fundamentals and simplicity first. There's a lot of value in that, and I think that it gets skipped. We've touched on that quite a bit. Anybody that's listening, that's an AWS type of focused person, they're probably curious about, specific technologies. And in the conversation of DevOps, we often talk about, it's the patterns and the practices and the people that are the important thing. But where are those of us that like to geek out on the tech? Any major services you'd like to call out in AWS that you think might be interesting for a security practitioner?
There are a few open source projects that are interesting. So inside of AWS, you can already spend a lot of time like using things like GuardDuty. There's a new service that they just launched that's Detective. That's kind of like the machine learning-y aspect of things, and it will grab all of your VPC flow logs and all of your GuardDuty data and try to find out like bad patterns. So all of these things will already keep you busy for a while. Then there are a few open source projects that help. There's Panther, and that used to be called something else. I forget. It came out of Airbnb a few years ago. I think it was Stream Alerts back then. It was essentially designed to be a SIEM, so security incident and event management system that was designed to help you detect malicious activity in AWS. We've built our own from scratch after several years of testing different things using Apache Beam, and we actually run that in GCP. We use Dataflow to execute that, and it's a massive like log event consumer that applies security heuristics to streams of data. But again, like this is something that's keeping like 2 to 3 people busy full time. So not something I would recommend, for a team that isn't quite at that level of maturity yet.
Yeah, not everybody's Mozilla, right? So we got to think about that a little bit too.
And even us, we're small. We still have to think about things in the smaller side of things. There's definitely a trend of people looking at what like Google is doing and being like, we can do that too. No, you can't. Exactly. You absolutely can't.
Yeah, knowing who you are as a team and an organization is super important, man. I agree. Yes, there's so many of those situations. But as we're kind of wrapping up this episode, obviously the book is a big focus. That's going to be in the show notes, and there'll be a giveaway. So multiple lucky people will get a free copy of Julian's book. But Julian, kind of as we're wrapping it up, anywhere else we should send people outside of like Manning and the book and all that kind of stuff?
There are some excellent resources at OWASP that always try to help with application security. And they're adding more and more like cloud security content these days. So it's always a good place to start. Some excellent conferences out there. Besides San Francisco has a lot of really good DevSecOps content. So it's a good one to follow as well. And I personally have a little like DevSecOps community on Twitter that I like to follow, and everybody posts a link every once in a while. But also I'll say some of the best security content I get just comes from my operations teams, because they're security people too. Like their main job is to keep things secure and running well and et cetera. And they often, come up with new techniques that are very useful to security, or new tooling that I wouldn't look at because they're not marked as security necessarily, that really help us do our job. So that's stay close to your ops people, stay close to your devs. They're good resources too.
Great tip. Talk to each other actually and share. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Awesome. The book is Securing DevOps Security in the Cloud from Manning Publication. Julian Behint, the author. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everybody. If you want to keep up with what's going on in the cloud, we have a weekly email newsletter called Cloud Skills Weekly, and you can subscribe for free by going to cloudskills.io/subscribe. Every single week, I'll send out my 5 best tips and resources that cover what's going on in the cloud. We'll focus on Microsoft Azure, Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud, and more. Topics will include things like cloud architecture, application development, containerized applications, DevOps and automation, certification strategy, career tips, and more. So if that sounds awesome to you, head over to cloudskills.io/subscribe and join the Cloud Skills Weekly newsletter today.